All right, well, let's finish out, Andy. We asked Andy to, and rather than presenting individual cases, to kind of go through the Sarah Cannon experience. I think, I don't know of any other place in the United States that's kind of carried out this model as far as you all have, and I'm really curious to hear about it today.
Great. So, I mean, this has been a really great day, productive and very educational for me. My thought always goes back to, how do we disseminate this type of information at large to our general medical oncologist colleagues who are fighting the good fight out in their communities, and how do we arm them with this information? And Sarah Cannon has taken a different approach to what we call molecular oncology support services. So these are activities that our personalized medicine program puts together and offers to doctors out in their community oncology practices. We started this work a couple of years ago based on data like this, which is, this is data taken from our drug development unit where we took a look at the extreme responders that we saw on clinical trials and kind of bend them into which types of therapies they had received. So a lot of our extreme responders, as we call them, received targeted therapies or immunotherapies. And so this kind of let us know that when we can really with high fidelity match a patient and their molecular profile to the right targeted therapy or immunotherapy, we have the potential to have some pretty significant responses. But it was how do we communicate that information to our community medical oncology partners? And so we set out on an endeavor to create these molecular oncology support services. And at the foundation of that was access to the molecular profiling data. So as most of you know, a lot of this testing occurs not in a centralized laboratory within our own institution, but we order these tests from commercial laboratory vendors that we've spoken a lot about today. They each do things a little bit differently, and so the first challenge was, how do we corral all of this data so that we can have really high actionability on this data? And so we've put together a lot of foundational IT infrastructure that I'm not going to talk about that connects all the pipes, but then also allows us to communicate with these doctors out in the field through a virtual molecular tumor board type of delivery model. This is kind of how that data flows. The big three circles is the typical treatment pattern here that you have, or activity that a doctor has. They order the NGS report, they receive those NGS results, and then create some sort of treatment plan. That's kind of the three buckets that happen. Our services come in, like I said, harmonizing the data and then creating this learning IT infrastructure based on the recommendations that our molecular tumor board gives and then the responses that we collect afterwards for those patients. And all goes into this kind of learning system, IT system, that always gets better and smarter as we put in more data. So the ins and outs of how this works, we run a what we call molecular tumor board, and it's basically variant annotation consulting work. So a doctor can reach out and say, what does this particular BRCA mutation mean? Is it inactivating? Is it one that would be sensitive to a PARP inhibitor? And we do the work on the back end to annotate that variant for them. And moreover, they can send us very complex NGS reports that we've seen here today. And we basically take those reports and run them through a sieve and say, worry about these, don't worry about these mutations as far as actionability goes. And that's what the main gist of the program is. And like I said, we result that information back into this digital platform that our doctors have access to throughout the network. That platform is called Genospace. And Genospace is, they do all of the work in harmonizing the data and then providing a secure communication platform that we converse with our doctors back and forth with. This is what we do in these molecular tumor boards or cancer conferences. We make a commitment to our doctors that we review every single NGS report that they order. It doesn't matter the complexity, so we review a lot of KRAS colon cancer patients. But we also review a lot of very complex cases. And we decided to do this because the academic model of picking a few interesting cases and talking about them in depth wasn't something that our oncologists were interested in. They wanted to know, for my patients that I'm seeing this week, what can I do for those patients? And so we do these molecular tumor boards at their individual clinics all across our network. That includes in Tennessee and Florida and Denver and other places. And we do it regularly occurring every 2 weeks or every month, depending on their caseloads. And we talk through suitability of patients for clinical trials in our network, targeted therapies, of course, contraindications, potential germline considerations, and others. All of that gets distilled into these tumor boards that we deploy locally where they're ordering the tests. We do and follow the AMP-ASCO guidelines for variant calling and descriptions. So all the way from tier 1 to tier 4 FDA approval to benign, likely benign variants. And that's just a way to standardize things so that our doctors can be assured that whether it's me or someone on my team who's analyzing these variants, that we're all following the same standard procedures to do that. And then just a couple of examples I wanted to show here of how this molecular tumor board is delivered, what it looks like, and the results from there. So this is just a really quick head and neck cancer case that has two interesting HER2 mutations, but they both exist in the ligand binding domain. And this is not a canonical HER2 positive as far as overexpression or amplified, but these are discrete point mutations. And the thought was, based on the literature, that these might be activating and potentially sensitive to inhibition with a targeted therapy. The patient enrolled on a targeted therapy clinical trial and had a very robust response. And that quote there is from the research note there, that the patient returned back to his hobby of woodworking and reports a better quality of life overall. And this was based off of a discussion that we had with the doctor that decided to modulate their treatment plan based on the detection of these non-canonical HER2 mutations. Similarly, we talk through cases like this where we have a variant that hasn't been described before. This is an FGFR2 fusion. It's fused with this gene VCL, and at the time, there were no reports in the literature about this particular fusion, but we knew from other literature fusions that occurred in that region were likely oncogenic, and so we discussed a clinical trial. It was a targeted therapy with activity against FGFRs, and this patient also had a very robust response to a pretty common drug there, regorafenib, in response there. So those are the types of actions that we take out of these molecular tumor boards. And it works extremely well at an organization like Sarah Cannon because we've got access and broad access to clinical research, even for doctors out in their community setting. And having access to these clinical trials really makes the difference with these molecular tumor boards because we can discuss therapies that they otherwise might not have broad availability to. And last bit here, so this is actually my pathway study that was discussed earlier. And the reason I bring it up is because we were a part of the molecular tumor board for the my pathway study to actually determine whether or not a mutation was appropriate or not for the MyPathway study. Representatives from Sarah Cannon were. So this is an example of how you can actually take a clinical trial and execute a molecular tumor board for that specific clinical trial and hedge the bets for response based on an expert group of reviewers taking a look at these patients. So these are some direct outcomes from our experience of molecular tumor boards. So this graph on the left is the number of reports ordered per month, that line. And the vertical line in the middle there is when we initiated the molecular tumor boards at this one site. And then we measured 6 months before and 6 months after the number of molecular reports that were ordered, just as a way to see if we were encouraging doctors to order more just based on the fact that we were reviewing these cases. And what we saw was when you add that support into their clinical decision-making, they're more likely to order the test again in the future. And so this was a really important finding for us, that the doctors really wanted to do this but didn't have the support in place to make the most of those reports when they ordered them. We had an 18% accrual rate to clinical trials for folks who went through this program, which is fairly high considering the national average. And they went on targeted therapies predominantly, but also some immunotherapy studies and others that you see there. So it looks like when you put these molecular oncology support services on top of a very busy community oncology setting, you can actually change practice patterns a little and encourage clinical research. And that was what our kind of main focus was for that. This goes to show, so that was one clinic example. We've done this kind of analysis in our network at large. When our molecular tumor boards were initiated network-wide and the ensuing increase in molecular profiling that has occurred. Now, that's not necessarily causal. There's a lot of things that happened in, when is that, late 2016, early 2017, from a targeted therapy and immunotherapy standpoint that all contributed to that, but it was a serendipitous time to actually start these molecular tumor boards. And we see people profiling in a myriad of different disease settings. It's not just for lung cancer. And we're very excited about that uptick. More physicians are ordering these tests, and those physicians that are ordering them are ordering more of them year over year. And so that was the takeaway, at least from our experience at Sarah Cannon, when you deploy molecular tumor boards and molecular oncology support services to our community docs. It seems to be something that they gravitate towards, and they really want more of this kind of educational support. And that's it.
Any comments or questions? This gets into the central issue of, you know, how do we improve what's out there right now, particularly in terms of actions. Anybody have any? I have a thought, but I'll let you take your shot first, and then we'll finish. Anybody have any thoughts about it?
Well, I think we're very lucky, but then you ask, you know, how is this scalable?
Exactly.
I think we're getting about 500 a month of new molecular reports, and I think in our database overall, we have just under 30,000 molecular reports. So how do Andy and his team keep up? And so, you know, you start to think about at some point whether or not you have to start to triage some of those reports out and accessibility.
Yeah. And, you know, we're very fortunate too that we work with some pretty smart and sophisticated software engineers that have built our genomics platform, Genospace, that now is, like I said, kind of learning from what we've put in there. So that when it sees a KRAS mutated colon cancer, it knows that we've got these studies available for those if they're microsatellite stable or if they're not, and can kind of triage that decision support for us without us having to do a lot of the heavy work over and over again.
It's like where AI comes in.
That's right.
Subsequent to the recording of this program on December 20th, 2019, the FDA granted accelerated approval to trastuzumab duratoxin for patients with unresectable or metastatic HER2-positive breast cancer who've received two or more prior anti-HER-based regimens in the metastatic setting. Also, on December 16, 2019, the FDA approved enzalutamide for patients with metastatic castrate-sensitive prostate cancer. This concludes our program. Special thanks to our faculty, and thank you for listening. This is Dr. Neil Love for Genomic Assays in the Real Oncology World.